The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live Internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
This is The Growth Strategist with Aldana Ambler. All comments, views, and opinions expressed on the following show are solely those of the host, guest, and its callers. It's time for The Growth Strategist. Here's your host, Aldana Ambler.
Welcome to the show. This is The Growth Strategist, Aldana Ambler. I always laugh when I hear the two disclaimers before the show. I feel like I better do something controversial pretty soon to deserve the two disclaimers. It's like it's Howard Stern or something. Well, today we're going to be talking about diversification, yes, chaos, no. Think about this. With the recession and the number of challenges and the things that most of us are doing in this mid-market, you know, my audience, my guests, myself, we're all presidents and CEOs of mid-sized companies, typically between 20 and 200 million, and we have $1 billion in sight. All right, so those of us who are in that kind of zone right now, it's very tempting to start acquiring companies, diversify the portfolio of the products to hedge your bets, because if one doesn't work, then you can play another one. And what I'm noticing happening in the last 6 months in particular is a lot of confusion. Employees are not knowing what the boss is up to, can't tell if they're going to have money, they don't know if they have a job, they don't know if they're supposed to lead, follow, or get out of the way. Yeah, there's a lot of confusion going on. Now, let me give you a case study about some, and then I've got an example of someone on the show today that is an obvious example of being able to do this well. So I want you to hang on, and I'm going to introduce you to somebody that is taking a company from being a distributor into manufacturing while expanding internationally and doing acquisitions. I mean, hello, they know something that the rest of us need to learn. You know, acquired a company back in 2000, grew it to from 30 to 50 million in a heavily regulated industry. Did I get your interest yet? Okay, so hang on. Let me tell you a story first. One of my clients was in the computer side of things, local area networks, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, and did pretty well. And what would happen is the customers would say, well, if you're able to do that, could you also do the training? Because sometimes it's not just the computers, it's not the boxes and the wires and the stuff. It's we really need to learn the software and just getting tutorials and going to some class other place. That's not good enough. We trust you. So they developed this other division, and so they got into training, and all of a sudden they're into the classrooms and the books and getting trainers. And it's a very different kind of business than the computer geeks going out there installing computers and designing systems. Okay, so then what happened to them is they were good at that, and people would say to them, well, if you're able to, you know, put in the computers and you're able to put in, the, you know, give us the training and help us really understand our manuals, you probably could do some really tailored software for us. We want some applied applications. We don't think the software, that's for our time management and our financial software. We think it sucks. We need to have something that's completely tailored for us, and you really know us. So the next thing you know, they're hiring applications engineers, and they're worried about how many millions of lines of code and their development cycle. Now, I could keep going, but they ended up with six things. Now, does it make you nervous yet? Because one of the things that happens is they were related businesses, and they had core customers. I get that. But those businesses were so different that the metrics were different, the types of people they had to hire were different, and they ended up with what, you know, a strategist called drift. They ended up with the company drifting from what its identity had been. They couldn't even tell what they were anymore. And we had to introduce, when they brought me in, I introduced a process of looking at the strategy, you know, giving it some, I don't know, kind of a regular process, a routine, so that it's not once a year, let's look back at what we got confused about and how do we undo and redo. But, you know, really, a quarterly look, let's scan the thing and say what's working, what's not, what's complementing, what isn't, and where's the sweet spot? What truly drives the profitability of the business? Ironically, after about 2 years, this particular company, what was driving the profitability turned out to be, and it's going to shock you, the training division. It wasn't the systems integrators anymore. It became the trainers. They discovered that they had the ability to do that really, really well. And the product, the applications and all this fancy software, they wanted to productize a couple of their fancy applications. was draining the profit out of the systems integration business. It was draining it out of the training, and they had to decide, make a tough decision, let go of the pet project of the president, and focus. Now, that's what happens to a lot of companies that are trying to diversify. So why? It's because, I mean, I'm gonna make it simple, okay? I've been in business for 38 years. I've won two dozen awards as an Entrepreneur of the Year on a national and regional basis for my own companies, let alone the 850 clients that I've coached. So I get it, all right? I've seen an awful lot. Sometimes it's because they've lost track of what's simple. They lost track of some simple answers. It's the who, what, where, when, okay? Who do you serve? Now, in that example, they didn't lose who they served. So they had a shot at getting some information about, you know, how do they make money, what are people happy about, what do they clearly need. At least they didn't lose that. I think that's right. That's what's important right now, particularly during a recession. Don't lose track of the target markets, because if you have enough information flowing back and forth between you and your key customers, then you have much more reconnaissance, much more of an ability to make good decisions, because if nobody's going to buy your nifty idea, it's just a nifty idea. It's just paper. So that's the first one. Okay, the what. Now, the what obviously flows from the who. The who you serve and what they need is important, not just because you like it, not because you found this nifty engineer you want to hire, not because it looks like it's fun, but if your marketplace has a gap and there's a type of product that they clearly need, it's underserved, there's something missing, then you're going to get tempted at the what. I know this sounds remedial, but guess what? The bigger you get, the more remediation we often need. You get all excited about an acquisition, all excited about a merger, all excited about a key exec, and you can get talked into the equivalent of a used car in a product line. Are your customers driving you to say that that's the product line that you need to do? Now, I bought into a manufacturing plant on the other side of the world from me, and it's 2,000 parts for American-made cards made in Hong Kong. And what's really nifty about it is the scanning that we do to eliminate 200 parts a year. Intentionally, on purpose, we scan it to look for the ones that we should be doing, the ones we should be getting rid of, so they don't end up getting killed with scrap. So when someone brags that they're now into, you know, so many thousands of parts, I start to look at process and say, all right, I wonder how many are making the money. I wonder how many are the equivalent of, you know, a sale that got suckered into and they need to have a flea market sale. All right, so who, what? All right, how about where? All right, why are you going international? Well, nowadays, obviously, you know, so many of us need to. We're doing an internet radio show right now for a reason. You almost have to, or you've got your blinders on, related to where manufacturing can happen, where commerce is happening. The world is truly flat. For you to be, the bigger question nowadays is if you're only domestic, if you're only local, the question is why. But the where has to do with the costs. That's the key thing, it's in the quality. It's not you prefer to work in Belgium or you'd like to go on vacation in Australia. No. Where can you get the quality? Where can you get it to move? And sometimes what I'm finding nowadays, the regulations and the politics of individual countries are affecting the pace and the decisions of a lot of what we're doing related to parts, not just the cost and the quality. You got to have somebody really good at government relations. And the how. This is the key word in this. And one of the things that I've seen for companies that can truly do the dance of diversification so that it's not chaos, what they really excel in isn't distribution. It isn't what they're making. It isn't even the customer base that they have, because they can have high-maintenance, difficult customers. It's the process, the how they do things. And the ones that I've seen that have really successfully, you know, done stuff like change from a distributor into a manufacturer and expand internationally and grow and make money and acquire, they have a process internally to eliminate what I call analysis paralysis. They can't get lost in, you know, overanalyzing any particular idea. They've got to have a kill date. You know, let's look at this. Let's look at the feasibility of it. Does it fit the model? Does it fit the matrix of what we're doing? You know, picture a ball that you're trying to expand, and one expansion is the product line. Another expansion, another way, is the geography. Another expansion is how you do it. Another expansion is the types of customers. Another expansion is the cost. I mean, you've got multiple things that you're doing, and who's playing it. That means there's a lot of proposals on the table at any one time. If you don't have a delicious process that has criteria, here's your top five questions as to how you're going to evaluate an idea, so you can kill it and say, nope, next, yep, let's keep going, so that you have five or six steps to your process, but they never get bogged down, diversification is really hard to do. I find that people who have the worst, this is going to sound funny, the worst decision-making process, the worst due diligence, are forced to be specialists because that means that they can focus. They have the privilege of deep focus, deep analysis, taking a long time to perfect something and go deeper and further and in more detail because that's what apparently excites them. If you're a specialist at something, you want to go so deep and know so much more than everybody else. You want to diversify? You've got to be able to have your eyes open, your antennas out, and spot shifts and changes in the marketplace that you're in so you don't get stuck with several thousand parts sitting in a warehouse that you don't know what to do with. So focus on your process. Focus on the how. It is not to be obsessed about the customer. It's not to be obsessed about the product, not to be obsessed about the price or where you make it or whether or not someone sees you as a distributor or a manufacturer. It's the how you do it. And I don't think it's surprising that when I introduce them, you'll hear what I'm talking about, that our guest today is really proud of the fact that they haven't lost their service mentality, their approach to service, and that they haven't outsourced service. You know, they recognize that the products are available elsewhere. So think about yourself. Okay, where are you getting bogged down? How attractive are your executive team meetings? You having fights between R&D getting fed up saying nobody funds this and if we don't have innovation, we're going to lose to competitors and they're just so livid they don't want to talk to anybody? Are the marketing people acting like they're in a completely different company than the innovators, than the R&D people? Sales folks feeling like they don't have a budget and nobody appreciates them and if they didn't do anything, they can't get any orders, you don't have any money? Is the controller just talking about cost containment? All right. It's not the individuals. You can get so lost into thinking people are panicking, they don't know what they're doing, maybe we don't have the right folks, if we just had some reasonable people here, it'd be okay. No, no, no. Turn the mirror around and look at what is the process you use for decision-making? What's the criteria you use for screening ideas? Are there nice, tight, quick questions that get yes, no, go, kill? So that group of people that clearly have passion, if they're that angry, if they're that upset with each other, they still have passion about their work. Can you redirect the passion about their work through a tighter process and criteria for evaluating ideas so you keep it moving? Okay, now I'm going to take a break, and then I'm going to come back, and I'm going to introduce Jason Caldwell, who's the president of Dixie Aerospace, but he's also hanging on to that senior VP role at Wencor. Wencor is the larger company that acquired Dixie in 2000, I think that's interesting right there. Okay, they've got a nice tight process and they know what they're doing. But this guy can't let go of his previous role. I wonder why. We'll be right back. This is The Growth Strategist with Aldana Ambler.
Up-to-date business and financial news. Call now and get the financial information you need. 866-472-5790. 866-472-5790.
The experts are here.
Voice America Business Network.
If you're a struggling business trying to get to the next plateau and would like to learn more about what Aldana can do for you, log on to thegrowthstrategist.com. Listen to some of our many satisfied clients.
We called in the growth strategist to do a strategic analysis of our company, design an organizational structure, and improve our management team. The important point is that Aldana Ambler gets it. Her extensive experience coaching fast-growth companies has really paid off for us.
Aldana played a key role in driving the rapid growth of our company. We now have a strategic growth plan in place, obtained growth financing, have a stronger management team, and expanded our services, and are already seeing profits. Companies dealing with business growth issues couldn't ask for a better or wiser business advisor than Aldana Ambler.
What are you waiting for? Call 1-888-ALDANA today and see where your business can go tomorrow. Once again, that number is 1-888-ALDONNA. TheGrowthStrategist.com. Achieving accelerated growth with sustained profitability.
Technology is changing the way we live our lives and how we do business. On CIO Talk Radio, we talk about the benefits of technology and the great things it allows us to do, as well as its risks. Heard every Wednesday at 9 a.m. Central, 7 a.m. Pacific, Sunjo Gall interviews business leaders and other experts that are shaping the way we use technology. To learn more about the show, visit www.ciotalkradio.com. Keep up with the changing world of technology and listen to CIO Talk Radio with Sunjo Gall. Listen in every Wednesday at 9 a.m. Central, 7 a.m. Pacific, right here on Voice America Business.
The market's up or down, or if you're looking to improve your portfolio, our experts are ready to talk to you. Call now. Toll free, 866-472-5790. That's 866-472-5790. Voice America Business Network.
You're logged on to The Growth Strategist with Aldana Ambler. Call in right now with your questions and comments toll-free at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Now let's jump into another segment of The Growth Strategist. Here's Aldana Ambler.
Welcome to the show. This is Aldana Ambler, The Growth Strategist, and today we're talking about diversification, yes, chaos, no, and it means that you need to have a nice, tight process for reviewing ideas, a criteria for continue it or kill it. So I already got a couple of emails saying, okay, be as specific as you can be about the process. Boy, do I agree. All right, now I'm going to introduce my guest, and we're going to have that kind of conversation about his journey. Jason, you there?
I'm here.
Oh, hello, Jason Caldwell.
Hello. It's good to be here.
Now, what title should I talk to you, refer to you? Are you the president of Dixie, or are you the executive vice president of sales for Wencore, or what?
As you alluded to, I'm both. I'm president of Dixie, and I can't quite let go of that VP of sales role for Wencore either.
Well, in a couple of minutes, we'll get back to, like, how come you can't, because that's intriguing. That may be part of the reason that the process is working. Who knows? Now, you started at Wencore in 1996, and you were in sales and marketing back then?
That's right. Actually, started as a sales rep for Wencore and kind of worked my way up the ladder there, regional manager, director of sales, VP of sales.
I had only
some marketing
heard
role as well.
In passing, I know that it's in parts distribution, right? Is it
strictly
aerospace or is it a broader range?
Strictly aerospace. Wencore is a broad parts distributor into the aerospace market.
So you wanted to be in aerospace your whole life?
No, to be honest, I didn't. I did other things going through school and right out of school. I did social work and other things that interested me. But at the end of the day, business was fascinating, and then I had a pilot's license, and so when you put the two together, I liked airplanes and flying, and I liked business, and this seemed to be a pretty good fit.
You're going to laugh. I mean, I didn't know you had social work in your background.
I know. Most people are pretty surprised to hear that.
My master's degrees are in business marketing and social work.
Wow.
I did it on purpose because people who are trying to do rapid growth, it's not just the marketplace or the products and the money. It's, you know, how we get in our own way. That probably helps you more than you realize, you know?
It does. Well, it really helps a lot with the people aspect and putting organizations together and how do we have the right fits. I mean, I've found that there's a lot of stuff that I would consider to be kind of intuitive about people that's not so intuitive.
No, it isn't. We don't want to give them too much credit for teaching us that. I had to recover from my social work degree.
Yeah.
Anyway, all right, so you're in sales and marketing, and Wencore acquires a company called Dixie Aerospace in 2000. And
yes.
Dixie is now, you know, it's the one that went from 30 to 50 million in a few years. Okay, how did that happen?
Well, the first 4 years, it really didn't grow. It was pretty flat, and we were concerned. You know, we're not a great company necessarily at acquiring and doing all the right things, but we've been pretty good at bolting things on and making a good fit, and we're wondering what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually moved to Atlanta to run Dixie, and we had a good team here. We just needed to get maybe a little more into the systems we had established at Wencore, get it a little more integrated, and then bring over some of the things that had made Wencore most profitable. We had to bring that to Dixie.
So you waited for a while to see, you know, what Dixie could do on its own, and then I think, you know, if I can paraphrase what you're talking about, that is that recognition that your company, Wencore, has a process that makes some sense, that works, and you got to bring it to your acquisitions, you know?
Yeah, I think in retrospect, we do have that process. In the case of Dixie, we should have been a little quicker to jump in and make those changes.
There's your first piece of advice. You just acquired another company, did you not, in February? What did you acquire?
We did. This was actually an acquisition through Dixie of a company called Precision Resources.
Oh, that's right, February. Okay, February 2009, you did another acquisition.
We did.
You're going to sit on it a little more heavily than the previous time?
We definitely got involved faster this time, and but this company is profitable. Dixie was not as profitable when we bought Dixie. Mm-hmm. This one was, and so there's not as many changes to make, but we made them fast this time. We brought them into our systems and procedures a lot quicker than we did last time.
Okay, and I'm not going to ask any numbers, but you know, when you say systems and things that you want to like make sure all three entities are using. You talking about margins? Are you talking about deadlines? Are you talking about decision trees? What?
Yeah, there's maybe two important things. One is certainly margins. We, in our business, in a distribution business like this, as you know, pricing models are really key. You know, we're fairly complex in how we price and market product, and it's very unique to each customer, each experience, you know, different programs. So we don't just broadly say we mark something up like this and that's how it works, or we feel like we lose a lot of our profitability. So we're very specific about how we do that.
That's true. I have, you know, electrical wholesalers are several of my clients. It's just been an interesting little sub thing for me. And I went into this one place, and they have their top 200 products and such, but they have 65 to 120 price points for the top 100 products.
Yeah, I believe it. We're not quite that complex, but for our size, it's pretty in-depth what we do.
Wow. All right, so the margins part, you know, you're going to see where somebody's bleeding in decision-making if their margins start to slip, not just the money.
And a second thing that we have brought to all the companies is Wencor is kind of on the forefront of this, becoming an independent authorized manufacturer of parts through the FAA to the aerospace industry.
Now, what made you do that? See, that, you know, here we go. You're acquiring companies to get much more into the distribution side. Am I understanding that right?
Yes.
Okay, because Dixie is Precision Resources are both distribution companies. Okay, so you're
right.
Really drilling in deep to make sure you know how to do that well. And then
right.
In the middle of that, you decide you're going to be getting into manufacturing. How did that decision come up?
Yeah, in reality, we hold the manufacturing rights. We actually outsource quite a bit of the manufacturing we do. We hold the design rights to all the products.
Oh.
And so it has to come through our quality system for those products that we are responsible for manufacturing. But we outsource a decent amount of it. We do some ourselves, but a lot of it is outsourced.
See, a lot of the good distributors I know, they don't just own the distribution process, you know, the warehouses and the, you know, the moving the product. What they really own is the customer relationship and the quality. They own, this is the right thing for the customer at this time. Don't give me any guff. And they don't, if they're not as so hung up on exactly where it was manufactured, they're the ones that are responsible for getting the right thing in the right place at the right time.
Yeah, that's exactly what our business is about.
Mm-hmm. So why did you get into manufacturing if all these other people are doing it? Were you getting nervous about the quality level slipping? What happened?
Well, to be honest, the very first time it happened was clear back in 1980 with Wencor. They first got their first approval.
Okay.
And I think that time it was more driven by lack of supply. They couldn't get something, so they said, we can go manufacture this ourselves and make sure we can supply it to the customer.
Mm-hmm.
And they stumbled into something that became the most profitable segment of our business. When we own that part, when we own the design right to that part, and there's no other competition necessarily on it, or very limited competition, all of a sudden that gives us, of course, a great margin opportunity.
But you know what? To me, that makes me nervous because that's when a lot of companies start getting into trouble with their identity. They go, we've got the control over the design. This is our product. And I've seen some people in the sales side of things that are in distribution. They can't tell if they're really supposed to sell our product or stay the owning of the client and making sure they've got the right thing, even if it wasn't what you manufactured. I mean, that whole, who do you represent and why are you here, that's not so easy to walk that line.
It's not. And we've had to have several discussions about that. But even today, that piece of our business only makes up about a third. Two-thirds of what we do is still distributing products for other companies.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's enough of a driver for our sales force, for our company, for everybody to say we can't lose vision of two-thirds of our business. You know?
Exactly. But I can see it. The ones I've seen that have gotten in, like half manufacturer, half distributor, oh, my God, on a day-to-day basis, they go nuts.
Yeah, I can see that as certainly a
problem. Especially if you don't start specifying the products that your company manufactures, the fight is on.
Yeah, the other thing that may help us is the fact that it's a fairly technical industry, and the
mm-hmm.
parts that we're distributing are usually pretty technical in nature. They require some engineering background, some technical savvy. And so it complements very well to say, well, we do some of our own. We have our technical savvy to help with that. But that also lends itself to being better at selling products for other people.
Mm-hmm. You ever have a presentation where you're saying we're not recommending what we manufactured and here's why? For, you know, a specific situation? Don't reveal.
You know, to be honest, not so much that as we have two alternatives and we recommend this one. And this one is usually between two different companies that we might distribute for.
Gotcha.
Generally, if we distribute something for somebody, we steer away from producing that ourselves. We don't want to compete with the people we're
in our channel. Helping you. There you go. Is this something we should manufacture? Is this something we should represent and not blur it and try to combine? You hear about so many companies trying diversification. I think of Honeywell, for example. You know, they've been acquiring, and you know, they kind of get. If I'm understanding it right, I don't want to misrepresent it, but it seemed to me from a distance there was a little bit of a blur in their identity and they had to back out of some of the acquisitions. You know, that's a little more normal.
Yeah, no, that's definitely true. In fact, we occasionally talk about them and other companies and issues, not just with losing your identity, but also that company you acquired has a specific value to it, a niche to it, something that had that value, and whatever you're doing to bring them into the fold, you don't want to lose that piece of value, and we see that happen a lot.
I used to do acquisition organizational assessments, I know, long phrase, but for AT&T, because they would be buying technology, basically. They would be acquiring small companies. And what I would do is I would go in to analyze the business to make sure that they wouldn't kill what they bought, because it isn't just the product they were buying. Sometimes it's the culture of the company that made the product happen. And the culture of the company could have been the magic of the office manager. And if you inadvertently just started to kick out the way they do finance, thinking you can just integrate it into the bigger company, and you let Dottie the bookkeeper go away, you kill the magic of the business while you're trying to understand the product.
Well, that's a great example. And in fact, you mentioned we have Wencor and we have Dixie, and some may ask, why have you not simply rolled Dixie into Wencor? Why is there still this separate identity, separate business unit, everything about the numbers reported separately, even though it's a wholly owned subsidiary of Wencor? And the answer is that exact concern. When we bought them, they said, look, don't do what others have done and take this company with a specific niche. It's a product niche for Dixie. Mm-hmm. And try to roll that into Wencor too broadly, or you will lose that product focus. And it'll collapse.
All of a sudden, the chemistry between the people and they have a decision-making tree goes away. What's the product that Dixie does?
Dixie specializes in bearings, aerospace bearings.
Yeah, that's pretty specific. But you're up to like what, 2,500 parts now?
Yeah. Well, many more than that in total.
Gosh, you got a lot of moving parts. You got international, you got acquisitions, you've got manufacturing, you've got distribution. All right, now when I get back from the break, what I want to know who the key people are and the process you use to orchestrate all this change. This is The Growth Strategist with Aldana Ambler. We'll be right back.
Whether the market's up or down, or if you're looking to improve your portfolio, our experts are ready to talk to you. Call now, toll free, 866-472-5790. That's 866-472-5790. Voice America Business Network.
If you're a struggling business trying to get to the next plateau and would like to learn more about what Aldana can do for you, log on to thegrowthstrategist.com. Listen to some of our many satisfied clients.
We called in The Growth Strategist to do a strategic analysis of our company, design an organizational structure, and improve our management team. The important point is that Aldana Ambler gets it. Her extensive experience coaching fast growth companies has really paid off for us.
Aldana played a key role in driving the rapid growth of our company. We now have a strategic growth plan in place, obtained growth financing, have a stronger management team, and expanded our services, and are already seeing profits. Companies dealing with business growth issues couldn't ask for a better or wiser business advisor than Aldana Ambler.
What are you waiting for? Call 1-888-ALDANA today and see where your business can go tomorrow. Once again, that number is 1-888-ALDONNA. TheGrowthStrategist.com. Achieving accelerated growth with sustained profitability.
Now, Mrs. Johnson, before we close on your mortgage loan, I want to make sure you remember Mike.
Hi. You can trust me. I'm African-American, just like you.
So, here's the low monthly payments and interest rates we promised, and here's where they triple.
The rest of this stuff is just here to make sure that we get your house when you can't pay us back.
What a lovely house.
Predatory lenders are never this easy to spot. Call us at 866-222-FAIR and protect yourself with the facts. A public service announcement brought to you by the National Fair Housing Alliance and the Ad Council.
Technology is changing the way we live our lives and how we do business. On CIO Talk Radio, we talk about the benefits of technology and the great things it allows us to do, as well as its risks. Heard every Wednesday at 9 a.m. Central, 7 a.m. Pacific, Sunjoe Gall interviews business leaders and other experts that are shaping the way we use technology. To learn more about the show, visit www.ciotalkradio.com. Keep up with the changing world of technology and listen to CIO Talk Radio with Sunjoe Gall. Listen in every Wednesday at 9 a.m. Central, 7 a.m. Pacific, right here on Voice America Business.
From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network.
You're logged on to The Growth Strategist with Aldana Ambler. Call in right now with your questions and comments toll-free at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Now let's jump into another segment of The Growth Strategist. Here's Aldana Ambler.
Welcome back to the show. This is The Growth Strategist, Aldana Ambler, and today we're talking about diversification, yes, chaos, no. All right, and my guest is Jason Caldwell of Dixie Aerospace and Wencor. And I got to go back to that question of, all right, now because you're managing, and you and several people are handling things like distribution, manufacturing, going internationally, acquisitions. You got a lot going on. Is that one of the reasons you're still hanging on to the executive VP over sales and the president of Dixie?
Yeah, that's a great question. Probably the question everybody asks, or frequently asks, and even my own team asks, why still have multiple people here with two roles?
Okay. Is that helpful, or is it just not letting go?
it is helpful. It is helpful in that there are just a handful of us, if you talk about Wencor as a whole, there are a handful of us that are involved in most of the strategic decisions we make, bringing on a supplier partner, making an acquisition, strategic initiatives in a certain geography, expanding internationally, for example, in a certain area. There's a few of us that are kind of involved in all those discussions.
Right.
Once you get past that, though, when you talk about, well, here's the specific company we want to acquire, that, or here's the running this distribution segment of the business, or here's this running this manufacturing, then it is a whole, that's when you get to your subset of teams, and those meetings are generally held with one of us and then a group of them.
So what I sense is, and tell me shut up or I can't answer that if you have to, okay? I don't know your culture. But do you retain some clout with Wencor if you're still, a high-ranking sales guy to look at everything like acquisitions and international and strategic change? And if you were only the president of Dixie, would you be seen as over day-to-day operations of the bearing side of things, and you might lose some of the – you wouldn't be in the middle of the game?
Yeah, sure. I'm sure there's some truth to that. You know, that's a – very astute observation.
All right, so succession-wise, you might need to have a president of Dixie in a few years behind you or not? And again,
well,
if
we maintain the same structure, that may be the right way to go. And we frequently talk about, do we have the right structure with a subsidiary like Dixie or Precision that we just bought?
Because this is now one of the reasons I asked this, and I don't mean to embarrass you. One of the reasons that I asked this is the people who can truly handle the complexities often need one foot in one door and one foot in the other, and it's hard organizational structure-wise, if that's a phrase, to do that. Because I find what happens is somebody gets assigned to the subsidiary, and they're over operations, and they're only allowed to talk about that, and they've got opinions about, wait a minute, I think we could, our process isn't right, or maybe the money's not right. And you found a way to have some clout on both sides, and that's maybe one of the reasons it's working.
Yeah, but from a selfish standpoint, you know, to be honest, there are parts of me that enjoy having a role in both. I feel a little bit like what you're describing.
Mm-hmm.
On the flip side, I have multiple times offered to take just one role or the other within the organization.
Mm-hmm.
But we have a pretty thin bench, people who really understand our business all the way across everything we do.
Mm-hmm.
And it's basically a family-owned business. One family owns the whole thing, and they kind of have to gain confidence in somebody to have them go run that significant of a piece of the business, and they're slow to gain that confidence. So they have kind of felt like, well, as long as you can hang on and keep doing well in both, we like that. We like that model.
Do you have to
you
get
see that not just with me, but with
backup and assistance to be able to do it?
Well, certainly. Yeah, I mean, I have to have confidence in the team members under me on both sides. You know, you're talking about, you know, roughly a $200 million entity in Wencore and a $50 million entity in Dixie, and you can't keep up with everything on that without people that are really doing a lot of it for you.
All right. So draw the. I appreciate that. One of your suggestions would be to give up sleep, huh?
Yeah.
All right. So now draw the picture. I don't know. And do you convene? Do you meet? How do you handle all this change? Give us have the little camera go into your place and have us be voyeurs. How do you do this?
So on the Wencore level, is that your question?
Yeah, I mean, you got a lot of change going on. You got acquisitions. You've got changes from being distribution to manufacturing. You've got 2,500 parts plus. You've got international. I mean, you got another acquisition probably in your head. How do all these ideas come to the table? Is there actually a physical table?
There is.
Who's
this? First of all, we have a very tight relationship with that group that's kind of the few key players across everything.
What are their titles? Yeah. Who's sitting at the tight group table?
So there's the Wencore president.
Okay.
Right, the VP of business development for Wencore.
Okay.
Legal counsel, who's also kind of we bounce all of our ideas through. He's got a good business mind.
That makes sense.
The CEO, who's the owner himself, and then me. I'd say that's maybe the very first echelon, and then there's also a VP of sales for Europe and a VP of sales for Asia who
okay.
kind of maybe are sometimes part of that depending on what it is.
And I didn't hear CFO, did I?
No.
No kidding.
Which is interesting. We see that as a little bit of a weakness. We don't actually even have a CFO. We have a controller.
Uh-huh. And there's a big difference.
Yeah, and we probably should. We've had a CFO in the past for several years ago. We've let that kind of slide, and mm-hmm. basically because we are all self-funded,
yeah.
Our finance stuff isn't very complicated, but when we do acquisitions and when we do significant inventory investments, we do see that as a little bit of a stumble for us. We should be stronger. We should potentially have a stronger player there.
And the irony is I would suggest to you don't rush to just fill it with a body. That just listening to you, even for this short period of time, having the wrong CFO could blow the flow.
Absolutely.
You know?
That's probably one of the big reasons
kind of rhythm
we don't have
those five people are saying to each other. So how often do you convene? How do these ideas come to you? Let's say somebody's got an idea for an acquisition or you can feel the need to improve something, and so you're looking for an acquisition. How does that happen?
Well, so we meet calendar-wise for sure in the same location only twice a year, not very often.
Wow!
But we have a lot of ad hoc meetings in between that. I mean, we're a tight enough group that we're probably actually talking almost every day or at least every week about some of these things. So it ends up being, due to geographies, a lot of conference calls and just discussions and throwing things out.
Yeah.
We have a little bit of a model
twice
a year, that we
use. Like, what? You got to be kidding. No. It's funny. Okay. All right, so you got your conference call. How is it done? How is it structured?
It's not very. It's very free flow. We get on the phone. Here's the idea. Do we have the money to finance it? What's the return? What are some of the, why does it fit our moat? And this is where I think the heart of what you're driving at today is it's more when you have to say no than when you have to say yes, because there are so many opportunities out there, so many ways to go drive out there that we've had to get better and better at saying no compared to saying.
So what are some of your criteria for saying no? That's a great question.
Well, the first thing is we've learned product focus and market focus are kind of the two things that are really drivers for us. Not so much geography, where we really feel like we can expand pretty much anywhere.
Right.
But it has to be not just, first of all, we're solely aerospace, so if it's outside aerospace, we're going to say no.
And not everybody can handle that industry. It's so regulated and it's got its own culture.
Right.
And I wouldn't want to be buying, an airplane company, an airline company now. Oh, my
right.
God.
And many people feel that way. We feel like that's a good barrier for us to kind of help
yes.
other competitors out.
Yeah, you go play there. It looks impossible to most people. Yeah, exactly.
By the same token, we don't want to go play in other industries where there are other players who don't see barriers and it becomes more competitive. So we say no to those opportunities. Even though our products, when you talk about bearings for Dixie, for example, have a lot of application in everything in the world, right? I mean,
yeah.
Anything industrial uses a bearing of some type, but we've said no to those opportunities outside of aerospace.
And it would be tempting. I understand that. You see these guys sitting there and you go, come on, we can multipurpose this. And some entrepreneur that gets hired wants to have you diversify. You'd have to make a separate company to do that. You know that. All right, so back at the table, do you guys, you know, just throw ideas at each other when you say it's not the Wencore way? And you know, I want to hear the screen. How do you listen to each other's ideas?
We do. We will actually put down the stuff. You know, here's what the product is. Here's what the market is. We kind of run through the same questions you talked about: who, what, where, how. And usually, if it even gets there, it financially probably makes sense. We probably already screened it out if there's not a financial case for it.
Okay.
But we'll kind of verify that, say, yeah, financially, we think we can swing it. The first question is capital. Do we have the capital, and is it the best use of our capital to do it? And second, if so, is it a product and market fit, and is it a cultural fit? And that is where the scream happens. I mean, all of a sudden, you can get differing opinions in that group about how good the fit is.
What's your culture like? What does that mean when you say, does it fit our culture?
Well, despite the fact that we have a lot going on, distribution, manufacturing, acquisition, international expansion, we consider ourselves pretty conservative.
Mm-hmm.
We don't see ourselves taking a lot of risk. You know?
I hear family-owned in here somehow.
We are family-owned. We're a pretty tight group. There's very little turnover among the management team, especially of our group, but even among the employees, the turnover is very low.
Yeah.
It's a pretty close group, and we don't see ourselves stretching our necks out very often.
Mm-hmm. So you got to get a good business case. You're not going to just get a yes.
That's right. It's got to feel like a good fit, too. And our process, there's some good logic and method to it, but we're also going to ask questions like, well, what is the team like that we're bringing into this? And are they? Can they handle kind of the way we do business? We're frugal. We don't spend a lot of money on highfalutin things. Do they culturally fit with that?
Mm-hmm. So when you bought Dixie, it's a while ago, you visited several times to see, okay, now maybe they're not making as much profit as we'd like, but would they accept our approach for us to be able to get the lift that we need?
Yeah, absolutely. We actually asked those questions up front before going through with the acquisition. You know, are we going to get a lot of pushback on how we do things, or is this a team that can accept that and become part of that culture?
Well, and some people are waiting for change. You know, they want, to me, you know, a phrase that I get quoted on an awful lot, I say an acquisition is a company in search of a CEO.
Yeah.
Honest to God, I think that's the biggest thing that is going on. For lots of reasons. Sometimes if somebody's just bored. Sometimes they got sick. Their leadership, they need to do something else. There's tons of reasons companies are looking for a CEO at the moment.
Well, and the Dixie example was a good one because they went from a company that was so different, who owned them previously, from how we are. I mean, we were very different from them.
Well, that missed, you know, even though it took a few years, they were ready. What about Precision? Did they have a different situation? What was going on there?
Yeah, they were just privately held. They had one owner. She was ready to kind of move beyond. She felt like the business couldn't grow much more with what she could do.
There's usually a story like that when it works. I understand that. But it's interesting to me, you know, it's not like you have, here's the five projects that we're working on at Wencore, here's the strategy that we're going after, we want to triple this year, we want to have this much net. You're saying basically that the proposals for expansion, the ideas are coming from any one of the five. Yeah,
and even below the five, a team member of the five.
Wow, okay, we got to get into that. All right, after the break, we're going to come back. How do you do middle up down? Because that's what you're talking about. This is The Growth Strategist with Aldana Ambler. We'll be right back with Jason Caldwell.
The market's up or down, or if you're looking to improve your portfolio, our experts are ready to talk to you. Call now, toll free, 866-472-5790. That's 866-472-5790. Voice America Business Network.
If you're a struggling business trying to get to the next plateau and would like to learn more about what Aldana can do for you, log on to thegrowthstrategist.com. Listen to some of our many satisfied clients.
We called in the Growth Strategist to do a strategic analysis of our company, design an organizational structure, and improve our management team. The important point is that Aldana Ambler gets it. Her extensive experience coaching fast growth companies has really paid off for us.
Aldana played a key role in driving the rapid growth of our company. We now have a strategic growth plan in place, obtained growth financing, have a stronger management team, and expanded our services, and are already seeing profits. Companies dealing with business growth issues couldn't ask for a better or wiser business advisor than Aldana Ambler.
What are you waiting for? Call 1-888-ELDONA today and see where your business can go tomorrow. Once again, that number is 1-888-ALDONNA. TheGrowthStrategist.com. Achieving accelerated growth with sustained profitability.
Mom?
Dad?
How long should I wait for you?
Mom?
If I'm at soccer practice.
What if something happens? Will you come get me?
Should I stay where I am and wait for you? Or go to Grandma's house since it's closer?
Shouldn't we pick a place to meet?
There's no reason not to have a plan in case of a terrorist attack.
Mom, if you're not home,
should we go to the neighbor's house?
How do we keep in touch with each other if the phones don't work?
Should I be worried how we all get home?
And some extremely good reasons why you should.
Can you tell me?
Everybody should have a plan. Take 5 minutes to talk about where you'll meet and how you'll get in touch with each other in an emergency. For other things you can do to be prepared, visit www.ready.gov. A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Homeland Security and the Ad Council.
Self-leadership is more important than corporate leadership. In the hustle and bustle world we live in, we need to be reminded that in all failures and successes, we are the common denominators. Each week, let Daniel Gutierrez help bring you the tools you need to manage self-leadership, resulting in self-success. Make your mark in your industry. Make sure you listen to Right Here, Right Now. Brought to you by Waste Management. Every Thursday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time, 2 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
You're logged on to The Growth Strategist with Aldana Ambler. Call in right now with your questions and comments toll free at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Now let's jump into another segment of The Growth Strategist. Here's Aldana Ambler.
Welcome back to the show. This is The Growth Strategist, Aldana Ambler, and today we're talking about diversification, yes, chaos, no, and one of the key reasons and ways to make sure your diversification makes sense is to look at your process of screening ideas. And one of the keys to it that I've seen from successful companies is they do what's called middle up down. That means that the managers in the field, the people who are living it and talking to the customers and making things happen, have that cultural permission to bring a business case up to the top group of people and say, all right, look, I think we have a chance to acquire. I think we have a chance to manufacture. I think we have a chance to, you know, change our process. I think we have a chance to whatever it was. And here's the business case. Here's how much money it's going to cost. Here's how much money it's going to make. Here's how it fits our culture. Here's why we should do it and somebody else shouldn't be doing it. That type of sell job within a company is very exciting. Now, they're not always going to get a yes, but that a culture of middle up down is one of the magic things that makes diversification work. And we've got an example of that. Jason Caldwell's here from, I always want to say Dixie Aerospace, but you're Wencor. I mean, you're both here. You're living that.
We are.
Uh-huh. Now, I have one question before we do contact information. Have you had a situation where you had a proposal from somebody and you said yes, and like later on you kind of said, well, maybe we shouldn't have?
We've experienced that, certainly.
Good.
A couple different levels.
There's one of your acid tests. The companies that are so afraid of that or would be embarrassed to admit it, I wonder if they're trying enough.
Yeah, I think for us, because we consider ourselves conservative, we try those things, but we know going in, if this doesn't work, if this just is an utter failure, it's not going to kill us. You know, we're going to be okay.
Well, what do you do on that case? Do you have like a dollar amount or a time frame where you say, let's give it a try, and you'll get rid of it if it's not working?
Yeah. We'll actually put that parameter in place. I can think of a specific product line that we tried that we weren't successful on, and it came through an acquisition, and we gave it a certain specific time and said, if we can't hit this number in this time, then we've got to get out of this and get on things we know we're better at.
And people aren't hung up in regret about it, right?
No, I don't think so.
Because that's part of the game here. If you wouldn't even try it and kill it if it didn't work, you know, you're too hard on yourselves or something, right?
That's right. We have a pretty forgiving culture in that sense. I mean, people know that we gave it a shot, it didn't work, they move on to the next thing and try, you know, and the same people that bring us those things have brought us all the successes. So they know that it's a, you know, you don't bat 1,000, but you hope you get most of them right, and we do.
I know some people in the banking industry that tried subprime mortgage and are still kicking themselves. But, hey, you know what? At the time, you know, just got talked into it, and, hey, you get over it and you move on, you know, even something like that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Uh-huh. All right, so now I want to make sure there's some contact information, because then I'm going to go back to how do you not have a loose cannon out there just, you know, recommending something nuts. If somebody wanted to ask you some questions or give you some examples of what they're dealing with, where would they reach you, Jason?
Email is probably the best, and it's J Caldwell, J-C-A-L-D-W-E-L-L, at Wencor, WENCOR.com.
And no telephone numbers, or just, you know, the email is the best for you.
I can certainly give you our corporate line, and I can get something that way. So that's 678-490-0140.
You sound like a guy who's on the road a lot.
Yeah, I am.
Mm-hmm. And you headquarter in what, Atlanta?
Yeah, I'm in Atlanta, and Wencor itself is actually headquartered in Utah.
Utah, okay. So that's what I mean. You're on the road a lot. And that's one of the reasons that the meetings are things like conference calls.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, it's a company of today. I want to ask you a little bit about the international piece, too. Contact information for me, if you know my name, it's easy to get me, Aldonna, A-L-D-O-N-N-A, at Ambler, A-M-B-L-E-R.com. And the toll-free number in the United States is 1-888-ALDONNA. You know, I have so many companies and telephone numbers that if you're dealing directly with me, that's the number you get. So two questions. One is, how do you prevent having a loose cannon, propose something that's really off the wall?
Well, I wouldn't say we totally prevent it, but people know our culture pretty well. I mentioned our stability, and people understand our company. They usually don't come in with something that is just so out there we'd never even consider it.
Mm-hmm.
But we do say no to things, you know, and even with that very loose parameter, people will come in with ideas that we say, you know what, that's not a good fit, but that's okay. We want them to bring the idea. We don't want people to shut down and not bring the opportunity, because then we might miss a good one. So
we have like a briefing periodically of the kinds of criteria that, you know, how do you, so people know how to screen ideas. Here's what we're looking for, generally internationally, you know, generally this or generally that, or not.
We really don't have an official briefing, but we do talk about, you know, we have a monthly regional manager meeting, a monthly sales meeting with our outside team, and in all those meetings we talk about things that people have brought and what the parameters were, and so it's constantly kind of in their mind. They understand kind of what the opportunities are and what to bring in.
Yeah, I can tell you're talking about it. It might not be as formal as you think, but I can hear it. All right, so international, you're doing that. What are some of your your criteria, your no-go and yes criteria for international stuff?
Well, it's what you mentioned, I think, in the first segment is really important to us. You know, we don't go places because they sound good. We don't go places because it's where we'd like to be or whatever. It's really business case driven. And in our industry, we're fortunate that there's a couple of aerospace hubs internationally that are very critical and easy to justify being there. And everything outside of those key areas, we really give a lot of scrutiny to expanding there.
One of my clients feels absolutely forced to go to China because one of the key players in their industry is kind of forcing it on everybody. And ironically, the numbers are not working as well there as they could some other places. And it's just been an interesting industry-wide turmoil because of one key player.
Yeah, it's interesting that you bring up China. We've focused on China for a long time now. Well, relatively long time now, let's say maybe 6 or 7 years, we've really pushed to develop things in China. And we still haven't really seen the return, to be honest, as dramatically as we thought we would by now.
Yeah.
It took us the regulation is so intense, and we've actually formed a joint venture that we just finished this year. It took us 2.5 years, I think, to make that even happen from the day we started and get through all the red tape and everything.
It's a lot harder than some people think it is.
Oh, it really is. Now, obviously, we've dumped enough into that, we're starting to get paybacks now. But our original return models have certainly been pushed out on what we thought we would get originally.
See, those are the ones I find harder for people to say, you know, continue or kill. Because, you know, are you going to get the return on how far, and you're so far into it. Those are the decisions that are harder.
They are. They're tough, and especially when you talk about a market like China, because we know it's a growing market. We know there will be opportunities there. You know you have to pay your dues to get in there.
Yep.
So you don't just want to back out, but at the same time you're saying, man, I could sure get a quicker return elsewhere right now.
Yeah, I have one client where it was coming down to the stubbornness of the old guy that had been opening the doors and had done so much to get in there, and he was just going to be, you know, fit to be tied if they said no. But all the numbers were saying, it's not going to pay off. This is not making sense. We've put too much money into it. We've got to try something else. He was furious, furious. But none of the models, none of the numbers said that they should continue.
Yeah.
Yeah, that can happen.
Well, and another criteria for that may be, you know, we have the fortunate stance of being a privately held company. We don't have to have the return this year. We can look pretty long term. I think if you're publicly traded and you've got, you know, more shareholders that want a quicker return, you may not have some of that luxury.
Yeah.
So
I don't know. Sometimes the families that can be more pressured than shareholders. Well, Jason, you've been a wonderful guest. I think people should contact you if they've got some questions. I appreciate you being on. It was real. My wish to the listeners, as it is every week, is for accelerated growth with sustained profitability. Make sure you reverse the phrase. You need to have profitability that you can sustain. Then you go for growth and then step on the gas. This is The Growth Strategist with Aldona Ambler, signing out.
Voice America Business would like to thank you for logging on and tuning into The Growth Strategist. Join us each Tuesday at 8 a.m. Pacific Time for another exciting episode of The Growth Strategist, right here on the Bottom Line in Business Talk, Voice America Business.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program, brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live Internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.